Let's call this meeting of the House Health and Social Service Committee to order. It is 3:09 p.m. on March the 14th, 2013. Present is Representative Seaton, Representative Reinbold, Representative Pruitt, Representative Tarr, Representative Nagyak, Representative Keller, and myself, Representative Higgins. Let the record reflect that we do have a quorum. Let's see here. I'd like to recognize our staff today, which happens to be Claire Gross, which is our LIO moderator, Butch Carver, which is our House Recording Secretary, Paul Verhagen is my committee aide, which if you need anything in the back, especially the kids in the very back, just raise your hand. Paul will come and get you. But once again, we appreciate everybody here. A little housekeeping, and this goes especially for the kids in the back. Turn your cell phones off. I'm just kidding you. I didn't know if you had cell phones or not.
Looks like they do.
But if you do have cell phones, let's put them on mute so they don't ring. If you do, and if your phone does ring, this would be a bad day for that to happen because we all want donuts, and that includes the crowd. So, and we have a lot of kids back there, and I'm a dentist. So, anyhow, with that said, but I would like to welcome some special guests with us today, though, in the back. We have the Alpine 13 and under state championship participants. So if you could stand so we could all see who you are real quick. We very rarely have Alpine students coming in. So thank you for showing up. And we hope we have an exciting meeting for you. Okay, let's get on to business then. I'll entertain a motion to adopt committee substitute. Well, we have before us a blank committee substitute, version Y. I'll entertain a motion to adopt the committee substitute, HB 134, version Y, as a working document.
Mr. Chair, I adopt HB 134, version Y, as our working document.
And Mr. Chairman, I'd object for explanation of the changes.
Okay. So with that said, we'll bring Charles to the table, and he can put his name on the record and provide us with some answers.
Representative Higgins, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Charles Ginshard, staff to Representative Costello. Representative Costello is unable to attend at this moment due to her obligations in another committee. I appreciate the opportunity to present on her behalf. She will be here as soon as possible. So before you, you have proposed CS for House Bill 134, version Y. I'll go through an explanation of the changes from the previous blank CS, version P. Please feel free to stop me at any moment if you have any questions. So the first chunk of changes to this come in Section 1, AS 4701031B, 1 through 5. Overall, the criteria that the Department of Health and Social Services must consider when determining the fee established under AS 4707031A has been further refined to eliminate duplicative and ambiguous language. Language regarding the review of returned medication packaging has been deleted. Language regarding the 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, on-call pharmacist has been deleted. The provision regarding quarterly review has been amended to allow the review to take place over the phone and to ensure that a pharmacist is not operating in excess of their scope of practice. The provision regarding local delivery has been clarified that it must be using the most cost-effective method when delivered locally. If there are any specific questions, I'd be willing to highlight exactly the language that's been deleted, but if that satisfies the committee, I can.
Representative Ramble?
Okay, can you elaborate a little bit the most cost-effective method? I was under the understanding it was going to be U.S. Post Office.
Representative Reinbold, through the chair, transportation is mentioned in two places in the bill. The page 2, page 2, line 12 of version Y, referring to local delivery, we specified that local delivery is using the most cost-effective method. The next change I made, or that Representative Costello made to the bill, is regarding non-local transport, and that is occurring on page 2, line 13. And the change in this version is that we did specify that non-local delivery uses the most cost-effective method specifically by mail. So we did insert language that non-local is by mail, and that when it's local delivery, we just say that it has to be the most cost-effective method.
Representative Pruitt.
So just to clarify on that, and I'll feed off that, by mail, is it USPS, or does it also offer opportunities of UPS, FedEx, any of those others, or does it mean something that will end up in a mailbox or post office?
Representative Pruitt, through the chair, this bill does not specify. It simply requires that it be the most cost-effective method and that it be by mail when local services are not available. So it's my understanding that it could be USPS, it could be UPS or FedEx, et cetera.
Okay. Good. That's what I'm after.
Okay.
About the rest, that's what I'm after.
Okay.
Representative Seek.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So as I'm reading the Y version there on line 15, it says the method of transporting by mail the medication. So is mail not the USPS in this United States Postal Service? I mean, are we describing mail or package delivery service? I mean, I think that that's the explanation that I heard, but I think that specifying by mail, do we have anything from legal that mail would include non-mail delivery services such as UPS or FedEx or whoever's cheapest?
Sure. Representative Seaton, through the chair, I do not have a specific memo from legal, but when this change was requested, it was indicated that we would like to insert language that it would allow for mail, UPS, FedEx, et cetera. We did explicitly request that they insert language that simply means it's by some sort of a courier service. So this is what Ledge Legal then presented to us. So it's my understanding that this leaves the flexibility to use USPS, FedEx, et cetera.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, follow up.
Following up, if we are going to have this bill next at another hearing, I would like to get that clarified just from Ledge Legal that their term mail includes things that are other than mail.
Representative Seaton, through the chair, I will get that information to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Great. Well, Representative Keller.
Another topic, as long as we aren't moving this bill today, I'd be hesitant to bring this up otherwise, but I would like on page 1, line 9, where it starts there, for a prescription that requires scheduled unit doses in medication and compliance packaging. I was wondering, what is there any guideline in statute or regulation as to when a doctor would feel restricted to, make this part of the prescription? What criteria do they use to make that determination? I mean, is it clarified somewhere, and could I get that clarification?
Representative Keller, through the chair, to my knowledge at this point it is not clarified in statute. However, if this bill were to pass, on line 11, page 1, this bill would give the department the authority to promulgate regulations specifying which patients would be eligible.
And okay, so the eligibility is would be future here. My concern, if I can throw a concern out there, it is not a question, but it's one that I will be talking to the sponsor about, is that if we put together a program where we're really expanding services, I get pretty uncomfortable, and it seems like there's a big difference to me. I mean, it's a very good system to have your prescription put packaged, you know, for each day, especially when we know the data that it's so dangerous to not take prescriptions exactly as they're prescribed. And I can see this have a tendency to be that be part of the services that are expected to be provided or desired to be provided to the different people. If I had two or three medicines, you know, that I was taking, that'd be a really attractive service to me. And by, you know, so I'm just struggling with the whole concept because it seems like this bill might open the door to actually expanding the cost of prescriptions overall.
Okay. Representative Keller, through the chair. Right after the provision where it gives the department the authority to promulgate those regulations, on line 12 of page 1, the bill specifies that it be to assist patients to adhere to difficult dosing regimens. So that's, at present, that's the only direction the bill gives as far as the department how to promulgate it. However, currently the department does have a specific category of folks that this program applies to in regulation. And I do have a explanation of that included in the packets. I believe it will be the last item that's in your binder. It was included in there the last time we presented that bill. So if you like, I'll read right now from that what the current criteria is. These are bulleted out. The first one is living in a congregate living home. Second one is a recipient of home and community-based waiver services. Next is eligible for Medicaid due to a disability or blindness. Is an adult experiencing a serious mental illness, and is a child experiencing a severe emotional disturbance. So that's explained in a letter that's in your packets. I can send that to you again if you'd like.
Representative Keller?
Oh, no, I didn't mean to cut you off.
The sponsor's intent, if I understood it correctly, was that this program, if the bill were to pass, apply to the specifically the same group of recipients that it applies currently under regulation.
And I would just like to request consideration by the sponsor and the committee of maybe including that criteria in statute so that we know that we're not creating something that will just automatically balloon in the future, or at least have some comfort that it's not going to just balloon. Yeah. So that's what I want to do, and I'll talk about that with the sponsor too, if possible.
Okay, moving on with the explanation of changes, the second major change, which we already briefly touched on, occurs Section 1 AS 4701031C. This occurs on page 2, line 13 of version Y, and that's where we requested that legal insert language here that would specify that when we are using non-local transport, that it be with courier service. The request was specifically that it be open to a whatever array of couriers were available, but I will get clarification for the committee on that. The last change that was made is in Section 1, what was formerly Subsection D. That entire section was deleted, and if I may refresh the members' memories, this was a section that referred to a pharmacy being able to include prescriptions in a Medi-Set if the physician had not specifically indicated on the prescription that it needed Medi-Set. It was determined by the sponsor that this section was confusing, and ultimately not necessary in the bill, and it potentially could have created some unintended consequences. So the result, by deleting that in this current version as written, every prescription needs to have MediSet or whatever the terminology would be written by the physician on it to be included and eligible for reimbursement. So that wraps up all the changes between the two versions. I'd be happy to answer any other additional questions that the members have.
I have a couple of questions that I want to ask, but I think I need to ask that to the, who's representing the pharmacy, though.
Okay.
Or maybe you can answer that. Well, let me start off. I'm sorry. I don't mean to be confusing here. But I was told from a phone call that you guys have come to an agreement on a lot of the changes that you've made. And one of the agreements was that the five criteria for reimbursement would going to be bundled into one so they're not individualized. Did that not happen here at UCS? I didn't see that happening.
I believe that was, a discrepancy between folks. It's my understanding, and it was the request that when legal drafted this, that is the way this bill would be read, is that the department, when they calculate this fee, would consider 1 through 5 as costs associated with that fee. The department would then bundle them together and via a survey or whatever method the department chooses to use, would sort of aggregate the data and establish one fee that reflects these
all
five.
Okay.
Pieces.
Yes. That's what I say. Maybe we'll get the department up and we'll talk a little bit about that.
And Representative Higgins, I do have Robin Cook, President of the Alaska Pharmacists Association, online to offer testimony on behalf of the Alaska Pharmacists Association. So in the event that you've reached the end of the questions for me, I would like the opportunity to have her speak.
Charles, we've never reached the end of the questions for you. But what we will do, though, is let's move on to testimony. Representative Seaton had a question.
Mr. Chairman, I'd remove my objection to adopting version Y as our working document. All
right. So if he's removed his objection, then we...
Yeah, we'll work on it. Okay, good. All right, let's see here. With that, well, let's go to testimony then. Let's go online. And you said we have Robin Cook. Are you online?
Yes, this is Robin Cook. I'm a pharmacist from Anchorage representing the Alaska Pharmacists Association. So would you want me to go ahead and start my comments?
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, thank you for inviting me. And just to go over briefly, the association did have concerns with the wording in the original bill. We put these concerns into writing, and we presented them to the representatives last Thursday. Our concerns were addressed, and revisions were made. Our specific concerns were, the first one was defining a qualified pharmacy. The association wanted to make sure that all pharmacies licensed in the state of Alaska and capable of providing MedSets could provide this service to their clients. The terminology was defined in the bill in the definition of a MediSet pharmacy being one where 70% of their business with MediSets was removed. On page 2, lines 1 through 5, we wanted them to describe the services that will be reimbursed. The association wanted it clarified as to whether a pharmacy would be billing for each of these services separately or they would be bundled. Representative Costello assured us that they were bundled services and that the fee, I believe, was to be set by the state with Medicaid. The association wants to make sure that payment for these services will be fair to the pharmacies in the state but will not cause hidden costs to Medicaid and further burden the state. The association also suggested that the wording unit dose in line 28 had an incorrect definition and would be better defined using unit of use. And I believe, Charles, you agreed to change that for us. well, Representative Costello agreed to make the change. So in closing, I want to thank the board of the Alaska Pharmacists Association. We'd like to thank Representative Costello for supporting our profession and listening to our concerns. Medi-Sets are very important as a method of supplying safe and effective care to at-risk patients. They are time-consuming to fill and to check. We feel this revised bill equitably pays pharmacies for this service without putting an unfavorable burden on the state Medicaid program. So at this time, we as an organization have decided that we will support this bill.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm curious, unit of use, let's say we, instead of dose, let's say you have something that could either be a 50 milligram or 100 milligram. If the doctor, if the prescription is either for a 50 milligram or 100 milligram, under the way the bill would be with, if we use unit of use, then either one of those would qualify as a single unit. Is that correct?
If you look at the definition of unit dose is a single dose package as a single dose unit. We are putting multiple pills in that slot. So you might have 10 pills that the patient will take at one time. That is a unit of use, because that is what they are, that is their medication plan. Whereas unit of dose would just be single dose. Plus the definition at the end that says does not include a refill is really not part of the formal definition of unit dose. And because you would have the different slots for the time of day that the patient takes it, it's unit of use.
Kate, does that answer your question?
I think it does. So a bubble pack that has four meds in it for a morning application, let's say, that would be a unit of use, the bubble pack itself? Is that what I'm
Correct.
Understanding? Okay.
Correct.
And, Mr. Chairman, I'm
Go ahead, follow up.
Curious of there, you know, we do have an amendment, but I don't see anything about that does not include a refill, any change to that. So is there, since we have the person testifying, was your testimony that it should or should not include the, that does not include a refill terminology on, if you have the Y version, that's on page 2, line 29.
Yes, sir. It really is nebulous. It doesn't belong in there. I mean, why are we saying it's a unit dose, it's a one-time dose, it doesn't have a refill? That means we can dispense one dose for the month or the week or whatever that we're filling the box. So it really has no place in there. And that is the way I would interpret that definition.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm a little confused as to the testimony as whether the pharmacists are saying that the terminology that does not include a refill should be taken out or whether it should be left in, and I'm just trying to understand what the testimony is.
Do you understand the question? On, I guess we're on page 2, and you're looking at line 28, correct?
29, yes. 28 and 9, but 29. Especially.
Are you asking me?
Yes, we are. One more
okay.
time.
Okay. Yes, I do understand the question. I just noted when I was reading through the bill that it really is just an incorrect definition that is on there.
What's the definition that should be on there?
I don't even see a need to put it on there, but it's incorrect. At the definition of unit dose.
Right.
The part that's incorrect is that does not include a refill. That is not in the formal definition of what unit dose is.
So your recommendation then would be to get rid of does not include a refill?
You could do that, but the correct terminology when you're describing a MediSet, because you have multiple medications in each fill slot, is unit of use, because you might be taking four, five, six pills at a time, different medications. So it's the unit of use versus a unit dose, because unit dose is the correct dose for one drug packaged separately. Am I being too ambiguous?
No, I think I understand what you're getting at. Representative Tarr, real quick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In looking at the amendment, it looks like later in the earlier part of the bill, we're going to suggest changing unit doses to unit of dose or units of use. But maybe I'm just wondering if Charles can answer. Maybe in drafting that amendment, this definition part didn't get updated. And
Representative Tarr, through the chair. On the amendment, line 17 of the amendment indicates that on page 2, line 28, which is the definition there, we will delete dose and insert of use. The result of that change would be, as amended on line 28, it would be a definition of unit of use, so that we're essentially deleting unit dose and inserting unit of use. The rest of the text occurring on line 28 and 29 would remain the same. The other pieces of the amendment are simply trying to conform to that new definition change.
Mr. Chairman, just as a follow-up, but it sounds like what we're hearing is actually that's not a correct definition, so we would want to further consider amending the end of that.
Robin, does that sound correct? If we were to change the word unit of from unit of dose to unit of use, would that?
I will need to get to you the correct definition for unit of use.
Okay, I see.
We can't just take dose out and change it to use and leave the same definition.
Mm-hmm. All right, Representative. Okay, Representative Keller.
I would like to go back. And this is on the amendment, but I would like to ask her the question. If you wish, I would assume she was involved in the back on page one. The word difficult, you want to change to specific on line 12, 112. Were you part of that discussion on the potential forthcoming amendment here that is not in front of us right now? But I was just wanting to get you to reply to that while you're online.
I think specific might describe it better. Because basically we could use a MediSet for a patient on two medications that's just not compliant and can't remember to take their medications, and this so specific. Yeah, I think that would probably work better.
The reason that you may not have heard the earlier comments that I made that I'm going to be talking to the sponsor about is there's nothing in this statute the way it's written to give guidelines on when it's appropriate to use unit packaging and when it's not, and this would be it. And so without a definition of specific, it's left really, really wide open, and I understood from Charles that we have a good definition in regulation, and I'm contemplating suggesting putting the using the regulation as a guideline for a statute to narrow this down a little bit, and if we use specific, that would not align then with the definition that's in regulation, so that would introduce part of the problem. So I just wanted to put that on the record that it's under consideration. That's all.
Let me.
Okay. Representative, can I speak to that? Basically, I know from my practice, if we're having a patient that just can't manage their medications and we've tried other outlets, then we will call the MediSet pharmacies and get them set up with this. But usually it's initiated from the physician's office. When there's just so many treatment failures and the patient's not getting any better or responding. And so usually we as providers are the ones that decide this might be a better option for the patient.
Robert, can you just hold on for 1 minute? I want to put a brief at ease real quick.
Okay.
Has been offered. I'll entertain an objection for the purpose of discussion.
Let me go ahead and offer the amendment.
Okay, go ahead.
So I move amendment number one, which should be Y.2, and would ask that Representative Costello, staff, Charles, speak to that.
And I'll object for discussion.
Thank you. The purpose of this amendment was in discussions with the Alaska Pharmacists Association, a few substitutions were suggested. That it was the opinion of the sponsor helped make it a better bill, while at the same time not taking away of any of the intent of the bill. The first change, page 1, line 6, we are deleting dose and inserting of use. We've already sort of discussed what this is. It's an attempt to make a better definition, which will now be a definition of unit of use, and replace that where needed throughout the bill. So that when you take a look at page 2, line 28, instead of unit dose, we will have unit of use with the following definition. The one other change that this amendment would make is
You got a question on that, if I could.
Representative Keller, question.
Yeah, I think it's just a typo. On the on line, the one on 25 there, if you make that change, if you delete dose and put in of use, I think that we have just a grammatical. I think it probably should be units of use with a plural. Because it would read dividing by a provider into unit of use. Is that what you intended? Is unit of use or units of use? It's plural now, and it says doses. See what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And if we change it, just change doses to of use, it doesn't. It reads clumsily. It may be in exactly what you intended. I don't.
As amended, it would read. Medication compliance packaging means a package containing a specified quantity of one or more prescription medications that have been divided by a provider into unit of use. Yes, Representative Keller, through the chair, I believe you are correct. That is grammatically has a problem there. And
Mr. Chair, would Representative Keller?
Yeah, friendly amendment friendly there. Amendment? If it's okay, sure. If there's no objection,
which I would accept. Yeah.
So I believe the insertion that we would need to make is on page 2, line 25, delete unit doses and insert units of use, units plural.
Line 28. From here.
The one other area that the amendment affects is page 1, line 12, where we delete the word difficult and insert the word specific. And that was at the advisement of the Alaska Pharmacists Association.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nagyak.
Can you explain why the change from specific to difficult? Maybe we can hear from the pharmacist.
Representative Nagyak, through the chair, that was at the advisement of the Pharmacists Association, specifically Robin Cook. So if I may, I'd prefer to have her answer that question for you.
Robin, are you still on?
I'm still on.
Okay, Representative Nagyak had a question.
Okay, yes. I believe it was Representative Keller that was questioning this. I'm not sure who it was. Basically, we could have a patient that might be on their own two medications, but they're non-compliant, they're not taking their medications, so they're not getting the treatment. So if we say specific dosing regimen, it wouldn't, difficult versus specific is it need, they might have one or two pills that need to be packaged so that we can keep up and make sure they're taking their medications. Versus if it was a difficult regimen, we have patients that are on 20 different medications, and I would consider that a difficult regimen. But some of those patients are so organized that they can manage, and they don't need Medi-Set packaging.
So you're linking that to the packaging instead of the dosing? Or, I mean, the packaging?
Well, we are talking about putting them in a Medi-Set and paying for that. So, yes, sir, I am linking it to whether it's required to be, whether we, as in an office-based practice, would request that it be packaged in a Medi-Set and paid for with this fee. So that's where I'm differentiating there.
And if I may follow up on that, Representative Nagyak, through the chair, I think the problem with difficult may be that difficult is a subjective term, and difficult in that it refers to the dosing regimen. If you have a very capable person that has many medications, they may be able to handle it themselves, mm-hmm. even though it would be a difficult regimen. However, what's key here is that it's when the patient themselves can't manage their medications. It may only be one or two prescriptions. That could be a simple regimen, yet because of mental state, et cetera, the person can't handle it themselves. So I think that's one spot where this change to specific might clear up the bill.
Representative Keller?
Yeah, if the objection is removed to this amendment, I will object until we get, because I want a discussion again on whether or not we should define specific and or difficult, whatever we pick, because again, I see this as guidelines, like Robin testified there, you know, from the perspective of the pharmacist, I see this, but they're saying it's up to the provider to decide, you know, whether or not it's appropriate to use the service or not, and I think that would be it could be irresponsible of us not to put a definition on there. But that's what I'd like considered anyway. Okay.
Well, if there's no other questions for Robin, we'll move on. Public testimony on the phones.
We have a motion,
Mr. Chairman. We did have the objection, or part of the objection was that the on page 2, line 28, that definition needs to be expanded or clarified, and I'm willing to remove my objection, but it's under the understanding that when we hear this bill again, we're going to get that clarified definition there, and I think that Representative Keller's definition of where a specific dosing regimen could be made at that same time. So with those two requests that we get those at our next hearing, I'll remove my objection to the amendment.
At ease.
Let's do an at ease.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to go ahead and withdraw Amendment Number 1, but reserve the right to bring something similar back to it in the future.
Okay. Well, okay. Now we can move on. All right, let's still move on with public testimony then with on the phones. Let's see here. We have, was it Cortina Bates from Anchorage? Did I say your name right?
Yes, my name is Katrina Betts. I am from Anchorage, and I'm here today on behalf of the Ark of Anchorage and the individuals that we serve. And I really just wanted to, in listening today, I really just want to make sure that all you understand that the individuals outlined by the guidelines that you just mentioned, the waiver services, behavioral health services, those sorts of things, that all of them have, in order to have those services, have already had qualifying diagnoses. They've gone through a series of things with their physicians in order to have those services written into their treatment plans. And so I want to make sure that we're not using a lot of time trying to figure out what the guidelines of the individual, the recipients would be, because they are there, and they are pretty clear. The other piece of this is the individuals that we serve specifically, and multiple agencies around the state, that these individuals really need these services in order to have any type of independence or quality of life. Many of the individuals that I serve live independently and would not be able to count their medication in a bottle if they came in multiple. They need these individual packs to be able to take their dosages correctly without overdosing, or without, if it was too difficult for them, they just wouldn't take them, which would then lead to much higher costs in emergency room visits, jail, and those sorts of things. So I really just want to stress that to all the committee members, and I appreciate you taking the time to hear from us, but I really just want to make sure that everybody understands that the individuals that we serve really do benefit from these services, and that as provider agencies and their physicians work really hard to make sure that they do have these supports in place to be able to remain to obtain their quality of life.
Christina, thank you for your testimony. I think at the end of the day, I don't believe there's anybody in the division or here that is trying to get rid of Medicept's program. I think what we're trying to do is improve upon it. But anyways, I just thought I'd throw that out there. But thank you once again for your testimony. Paul, are you there from AMP Pharmacy?
Can I ask a question?
Oh. Yes, sir, I am.
For the previous
meeting. I testified last week. I don't really have anything further to add from my testimony from last week, other than I know that there was a lot of talk today concerning the line 25 and the wording to make that as clear and less confusing as possible. What we essentially do with the MedTech program is to put the is to lay out the medications to where instead of a patient having to go through several bottles or several or several containers to try to put together their dose. It's essentially taking their medication and making it to where there's one slot that has all the medications that they need to take at that specific day, at that specific time frame. So a possible recommendation to clear up that language would be to say on line 25, reading from line 24, one or more prescription medications that have been divided by a provider into individual doses to be taken over a specified period. With that language, I think that line 28 and 29 could essentially be eliminated because you wouldn't need a definition. But that's essentially what we're doing is we're taking their medications and putting it into individual doses. That way there's no, taking away the confusion and the possibility for error when the patient needs their medication therapy.
Thank you, Paul. Representative Tarr, did you want to ask Paul the question?
Not Paul. If Katrina was still online.
Katrina, are you still there? We might bring you back.
I'm here.
Okay. I think Representative Tarr had a question she wanted to ask you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just in the first committee hearing, we mostly heard from assisted living homes and how the Medisets were beneficial in their setting. But since then, a lot of the letters from the organizations like the ARC have come in. And I'm just wondering if your support of the bill now is because of changes that have been made from the original version to this new version, or, just maybe there's no reason we hadn't heard from you previously, but if there's anything that changed that your organization wanted to comment on.
I don't think there's any change. I mean, we appreciate changes, and I think that we just weren't able to attend the first time. I don't think that there was any reason. Yeah, it was just a notice.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sherry, are you on?
I am. I testified last week, too, regarding, because I come from the assisted living side and actually don't have much other than what we had already, you know, stated. But again, I just really support getting this into statute if possible so that we're not revisiting this issue time and time and time again, because it's very important to us as assisted living homes and the recipients that we have within our environments to make sure that MediSets remain and that, of course, you know, there has to be, you know, compensation for those that provide those. So I thank you again today for the opportunity to be able to testify again.
Thank you. Teresa, for Marlow Manor.
Yes, I did also testify last week, and I think as others who've already testified, I don't believe that there's a lot new to add. I did not get to really go into some of the concerns about cost shifting and such. I think I was last week a little bit heated about the lengthy discussion as to why we were having the discussion. I think that was something that was brought up, and I think my testimony more reflected my concern over that, that as Sherry just said, that this is not our first time dealing with this, and we would hope that we can finally lay this to rest. But really, just to piggyback on what most everyone else has said, such as Katrina earlier, there would be a significant increase in cost in other areas, such as, you know, increasing ER visits, jail, the correctional facilities, API, you know, other places that would serve these clients, because they would be out of compliance with their medication and therefore would have exacerbations of their conditions. So really just wanted to piggyback what everyone else has said. And again, I don't think I had the chance to thank you for all of your attention and support to this last week, but would like to offer that today. Thank you.
Thank you. Kahalani, is that, did I pronounce that right?
Yes, you did. Absolutely correct.
Go ahead and put your name on the record for us.
Okay, it's Kahalani Drew. I'm actually here for my children. I am a mother. First and foremost, a mother. I have one natural born child. I have a total of 8 children, though, and I adopted 7 of them. I adopted them all from OCS-type services. 5 of them are from the state of Alaska. If I did not adopt them, they would all be in institutions or hospitalized, and 2 of them would probably be in death. I have had them for, 7, 8 years now. I count on MedSets really, really hugely. My children are growing up and becoming adults now. In order for me to let them take that mature step to evolve in their lives, I need a MedSet to know that the staff, the agency, the home, and everything is running like clockwork. Because of my children's disabilities, not only mental health, but medically, if a med is not correct, and I'm going to just take one of my children, for example, has a dysfunctional autonomic nervous system, has tachycardia too, asthma, is in a wheelchair, also is bipolar with psychotic features. If one of his medications moves from morning to evening, in one day, he will turn blue from inside out and turn gray, and we're in the emergency room. Our stays can be anywhere from that day, 24-hour period, up to 7 days. Of them trying to figure out how to get this child to function again. He's alive, he's breathing, but he's not quite there. And that's just one of my children. Other children I have, if they don't have their meds daily and the right regimen at the right time with the way the doctors have prescribed it, somebody messes that up, they will end up literally taking out the whole staff, tables, chairs, you name it, and the police are called in. My children have not been in an institution or in a hospital for a long-term stay in the past 7 years. I have all the faith in the pharmacies, in the agencies, and the staff. However, when you're looking at a load of one person with, for example, 5 disabilities with one of my children, you've got 1 staff, 2 staff dealing with that person, but in most of these homes, And most of these places that people live, you can't count on that person, because what if that staff falls out? What if that person has an emergency? And for me, I have worked all these years, so I wasn't on public assistance, so that I wasn't abusing the system, so I did my part as a parent. And I just want to say that I back everything everyone has had to say. I wasn't able to come the last time due to my children's needs. However, I made it this time. And I just really want to stress, for a parent, I didn't dream of this life. I kind of took myself down this path. But for a parent, that's a huge assurity. Whether it is medical equipment, medical supplies, whether it's medication, their breathing treatments, I mean, one screw up and it can go all down from there. I mean, completely down. So I don't know how much you guys pay for this service. However, this service means do or die for my children. I mean, and I don't know how, you know, a person would feel that isn't a family member or an assisted living home working with somebody, and if that error happens, I can't imagine the emotional stress of the situation, let alone what that human being goes through. And as far as my kids, they were all born that way. They didn't ask for what they got. It was because of other people's choices that they are the way they are. So I can't stress more how much, as a parent, on behalf of my adult children and my young children, and I am guardian for all of adult and young, I support what this is going to do. Without this, I would move all my children home, and I would man patrol all of it myself, because I do not have that assurity if the staff has to do the mess. I need to know the pharmacist has done it. I need to know he's checked those things off, he or she. I need to see that paperwork every week when they bring me those bubble packs. I check it off. They check it off. We're all on the same page, because then there's no errors and it's a good quality of life. My child gets to see the next day. They get to enjoy this state. And all my children have been born and raised up here, even myself. So this has been a huge thing. And I'll be honest with you, for years I took it for granted, until I started really feeling the repercussions of the changes in the Medicare, Medicaid, and all that for my family. So I don't know how else to stress to you unless I go into tears, which we're not going to do. But I really, really feel that this is an urgency. I know it is for my children. Otherwise, I don't know where they would be right now.
Thank you for your testimony. Once again, I'll reiterate, I don't believe there's anybody in this room or on this committee that's trying to get rid of the MediSet program. Like I said, we're just trying to make sure it stays alive and stays efficient and does what it needs to do. But thank you for your testimony.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Is there anybody in the room that would like to testify? We're going to keep testimony open, but we do have some questions, or at least I do, for the department. I know we have the department here today, so they can come forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm John Sherwood with the Department of Health and Social Services.
Well, my first question is, can you go over the fiscal note with us?
Sure. First, just a point of clarification, the fiscal note was written to the P version of the bill. But the fiscal note shows an appropriation for FY14 of $414,000, half federal, half general funds match. That's on the assumption that we would have implementing regulations for this bill and have them in effect in approximately 9 months after the end of the fiscal year, so one quarter of the fiscal year. And then subsequent years, it would be $1,657,000, and again, that's half state, half federal. Those costs really come from two sources. One is We think the language of the bill would take us back to a point where we were paying for weekly dispensing and Medi-Set fees, and it does allow us to make some adjustments and take in these consideration of these specific items. We estimate that would increase our payments by $1 million annually. That's about half of what we were paying before our most recent change to reimbursement of Medi-Sets. The second is an increase of the $657,000 is our estimate of what it would cost if providers expand into Fairbanks. That was mentioned in one of the letters of support. We kind of took a simple, straightforward approach to say the principal Medi-Set pharmacies are serving Anchorage, MassU, and with an increase in the population served of about 20%, we estimated about 20% more clients would receive services, and that's the cost of that. Again, it's all the same, half federal, half state. So,
two more questions, Representative Keller?
Yeah, if I could, you heard my thoughts on and questioning. You know, in the regs that Charles referred to, you know, are set up for when the Medi-Set pharmacy providers, are authorized to do this billing. And my reason for bringing this up, of course, is that when we look at expansions like this in light of the overall condition of, our healthcare system and the increasing costs, I think we have to be really, really careful. And I was looking at those five bulleted points that have been read into the record, and two of them, if somebody is served at a home or a community-based waiver and they're given this service, I just give you an idea. To be eligible for a home waiver for care really doesn't have any direct ramifications on, the person that is being served, their mental state, whether or not they have family support, all that kind of thing, aren't really definitive as to whether or not the service is needed or not, right? And that was one question. The other is the area of the disability, and the next one, I understand more and more people are becoming eligible for Medicaid by qualifying for disability under Social Security, and the same question. I mean, I'm just looking for, would it be appropriate from the department's perspective, is any of that $657,000 expansion that you're thinking about beyond just the geographical expansion? Are you looking at this being a service that is offered to more and more people?
Through the chair, Representative Keller, the $657,000 was strictly looking at geographic. We did not see that this bill would change the sort of the scope of the population that would be served or eligible for Medi-Sets. To be eligible for a home and community-based waiver, you have to either meet a nursing home level of care or a care facility for people with intellectual or developmental disabilities. So if it correlates exactly, does it correlate exactly to the need for assistance with medication adherence? Probably not one for one, but I think, could it be considered a proxy? Possibly. Obviously, we thought it was an appropriate target group when we made our regulations. With regard to disabilities, the Social Security disability criteria hasn't changed. We've certainly seen a growth in our population of individuals with disabilities over the years. And again, there's probably a wide range of disabilities, some of which would relate to adherence the need for some kind of assistance with adhering to medication. But these criteria do not say disability does not look at the level of family support that's available. Although, some of the other criteria, if you're in a congregate home, obviously, the assumption is there's not a family present to support.
Right. Follow up. Go ahead. I want to be real clear that I think the Medi-Set, I'm just going to generalize term here, the Medi-Set service is a wonderful service. I think we got to provide it to those that need it. My concern, and the reason I'm asking the questions, is just to make sure that we aren't setting up a system that expands the health care services inappropriately. That's a statement. The other question I want to ask you is, it sounds like you're comfortable with the regulatory definition there. And would you have any problem, if we tried to use the same criteria? Yeah, I mean, would you see any problem, anticipate any problem that we'd run into if we tried to put those criteria into statute? Because, and I'll explain again why I'm concerned with this. If I'm a patient or a medical provider, there's incentive in both directions there to get this service made available to a patient, and if you're a pharmacist provider, the incentive is a little different. Everybody's in this and good faith, for the good of the patient. But anyway, my question is, do you see any problems if we were to take guidance from the regulation and put that into statute to build those sideboards in, or do you think that would be a waste of time?
Through the chair, Representative Keller, we do not have a position on whether or not that language should be in. If you put that language in, if there are other regulatory or statutory changes to the structure of licensing and regulating some of these things like assisted living homes, you'd have to make the adjustments in statute to this provision. If you did that, that's a general drawback, not specific to this, but
yeah. Thank you. I didn't mean to put you on the spot. One quick follow-up, but I wanted to get the question as best I could on the record in your response. Thank you. We'll work on that with the sponsor.
Well, I guess I want to put you on the spot a little bit. And maybe you can respond to this. I haven't been shy about saying this. I think that with the Medi-Set program we're sitting at today and regulation is better for us than if we take this and put it into statute. Now, am I on the right pace there or not?
Mr. Chair, the administration does not have a position on this bill, so I don't know how to answer that question without implying a position on
but
this bill.
I
don't mean to be evasive. No. I just trying to be honest.
Right, but that's the crux of the problem that most of us have is that you guys are kind of the experts on administering programs for the state. Our job is to try to make sure that you've got the tools to do it with, and so. For us, we look at bills that come our way, and we say, okay, are these good bills? On the surface, they sound good. They sound like we're helping. But sometimes it's a sword, it cuts both ways. So, and in my opinion, it's always been that we could always adapt quicker with regulation than we can with statute if this goes to statute. And I guess that's what I'm trying to get at is because I don't know where we're headed down this road in 2014 or 2015. And I guess that's where I'm at with that.
Mr. Chair, I would say that the department thinks it has adequate authority to provide reimbursement for Medi-Sets right now. That it does have adequate statutory authority. In terms of the specific criteria we have to meet, that's not laid out in statute right now. So we would have more flexibility as to how we do it. We contend both with the challenges of providing access to appropriate care and also meeting the criteria imposed by our federal partners, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, to have payment methodologies that are efficient and cost effective. And generally that's perceived as not paying in excess of cost. And they have their opinions on the best way to for us to ensure that happens. So do we benefit from flexibility? Certainly. But as I said, the administration does not have a position on this bill.
Okay. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm looking at the fiscal note on page 2 of 2. And on the third line down where it says the bill would require the department to pay the fees more frequently than the current monthly dispensing fee and up to a weekly Medi-Set fee. So we had some initial testimony based on changing prescriptions and the cost of medications. Does your current practice of doing monthly cost a lot when prescriptions are changed during the month? Have you, what has been the experience? I'm trying to balance the costs of medications when they're changed during the month versus this weekly dispensing and Medi-Set fee.
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, I guess first I would make the distinction that we pay a monthly dispensing fee that does not actually restrict the dispensing to once a month, only the number of times you can receive the fee for dispensing. If someone gets a new prescription for a different dosage or a different drug, that's a new dispensing fee. But as to our experience, I really can't answer that question in terms of the most recent changes we've gone through. I don't think overall across the board we've I'm not aware of general concerns. I think there have been some. I'm aware of some specific concerns around we pay a dispensing fee every 28 days, whether for regular monthly refills that would benefit from being a little shorter. I'm aware of those comments. But I'm actually not the pharmacy expert, so I don't hear everything. We can attempt to get a more substantial response.
Follow up.
Thank you. And Mr. Chairman, I think that this is one of the balancing things that I'm trying to do internally is, I mean, it's a pretty big fiscal note, $1.6 million. Now, if 20% is for the expansion to Fairbanks, and if using Medi-Sets saves us a whole lot by people not following prescription dosages or those kind of things, then maybe that balances out or that's on the positive side. I'm just not sure about this other part of the $16.85 for the mailing or UPS or whatever it, yeah, USPS is what it's saying here, and the weekly dispensing fee. I just have no basis for knowing whether that's offset by not being able to use a month's worth or part of a month's worth of drugs. So if that would be helpful to me, Mr. Chairman, if we could get some kind of estimate of where from the dispensing or from the pharmacy department, whether that's...
I think that would be helpful.
Whether, right? Yeah, it would be helpful.
You think you can get those numbers to us?
Mr. Chair, I'll see what we can do in terms of what is available. We only have records of the claim, essentially of the claims we get. So I would have to give it some thought and talk to some folks to see whether some of that information would actually show up in our claims data. But if it does, we could attempt to get it.
And Mr. Chairman,
go ahead, follow up.
And I guess, you know, we're needing some estimation. I mean, I'm not asking for exact dollars and cents on some of these things because, you know, wasted prescriptions, if, I mean, we don't know exactly what that's going to be, but to kind of give some parameters to this fiscal note, it would be helpful to know how that structure balances out or what we would be spending in those other categories versus now. But I'm not asking for, you know, the absolute detailed analysis. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Is there any other questions for the department? Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, I've left testimony open, and we had a latecomer on the line, and Mary Mundell, and she's pretty persistent about talking, so maybe we'll let her have the mic. Mary, are you on?
Yes, I am on, and I really appreciate you letting me come in late. I'm here at work, so I'm trying to get two things done at once.
Go ahead. You got the mic.
Okay. First of all, I cannot tell you how much I appreciate you guys supporting the MediSet program. I think that you certainly do understand it, and it's very, very positive. I am so excited to hear that from you. There's a couple of things that I would like to let you know with regards to where some of these issues have come from, where people talk about you don't want to get rid of the program. I understand that. One of the problems that we have run across is that there have been new regulations proposed from Office of Medicaid that in their new reimbursement regulations that decrease our reimbursement by 7%. And they're also basing some of their information on what we determined to be an error in a cost of dispensing survey for which they are basing their information. And with that error and the decrease in this reimbursement of 7%, what happens is, should those reimbursements become a reality, then MediSet pharmacies will not be able to continue to offer these services because it's way below our cost of doing business. So those are things that I definitely want to point out to you. And actually, we can show you, it would probably take a little bit of time, but I could actually get together some numbers that can give you the definite dollar amounts that would be able to help you maybe understand how those reimbursements are important to us.
If you can send those to my office, that would be great.
I will happily do that. If you can give me about 3 or 4 days to get it together, I can probably do that, and I'm sure that some of my other MediSet people would be able to as well, from either Amp Pharmacy or Geneva Woods as well. We would love to be able to give you that information.
Well, that would work for me. Mary, is that it?
I believe that's it. So I do, again, I appreciate your time and effort in this. You have no idea just how much it means to us.
Thank you, Mary, for calling in.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions for Charles or anybody? Okay. Anybody in the audience? Nope. All right, just a little bit of housekeeping before we end for everybody on the committee, Representative Tarr and all that, right? You know, we're running into our last days here, so if you do have an amendment, please get it to us as quickly as you can. I know we're going to run into the 24-hour rule pretty quick next week, so, but, you know, if we all kind of communicate like that, I think we can get things done pretty quick. So is there anything else we need to bring forth like that?
I would just, no, my suggestion is if you have an amendment, get it to as soon as possible, preferably a day, because as you can see in this case, the sponsor is having to at least wait until Tuesday before the next thing can happen. 24-hour rule, they'll move faster, but still, we don't have many days for certain items. So please think ahead.
Right. Okay. Well, that our next House committee meeting will be at 3 p.m. on Tuesday, April the 2nd. At that time, we'll hear a presentation by the Alaska Children's Services first. Then we'll hear a House joint resolution, H.R. J14, on delay implementing the Affordable Care Act, followed by H.B. 54, placement of child in need of aid. With that said, though, we will, as bills come in, we'll push presentations down. Besides, because the bills are important that we hear them. All right. So I want people to understand that. So even though we say we're hearing a presentation, we're also looking at a couple of House resolution and a bill
on that day, and who knows, we may end up pushing another one in there, or at least on Thursday as we go. Okay? Okay, with that, it is now, what time is it, 4:25, and we are adjourned.